While you're setting up, I'll call the case. It's A22-1645, Housing and Redevelopment Authority of Duluth, Minnesota, respondent versus Rodney Young, appellant. Council, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments. When you start them, please state your name and the party you represent for the record. Council for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are live streaming this argument, although we are maintaining for public purposes afterwards only a audio version on our website. Council for appellant, we are ready for you when you are ready to begin.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Peter LaCourse, and I am representing appellant Rodney Young. We're asking the court today to reverse the district court's decision denying expungement under inherent authority. There are three issues in front of the court today. First, whether or not courts have an inherent authority to expunge eviction files. Second issue is what factors courts should be considering when making those decisions if they do have an inherent authority. Then finally, third issue is whether or not the courts abuse their discretion in this case in denying Mr. Young's request for an expungement. For the first issue, eviction inherent authority expungement, this has not yet been addressed by the Court of Appeals directly. But there seems to be an agreement. Duluth HRA doesn't seem to be fighting on that issue, and the district court agreed that there is an inherent authority.
Can I make a clarification? So when you're saying that, you know, we've seen the statutory language that seems to, I'll call it, create a statutory inherent authority. Is there something apart from that statute that gives the court inherent authority?
I think case law, specifically those criminal cases cited in the briefs, State versus CA, State versus HA, the language used in those cases is broad, and it talks about just the court's ability to manage their own cases.
Right, but isn't there a distinction between access to court records, whether something is closed or confidential or accessible, and expungement, which seems to undo a previous decision?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the criminal cases are dealing with expungement as well. And I think the broad principles, and there's case law that they cite to as well that isn't necessarily from criminal cases. But the broad principles seem to apply to all cases, not just criminal cases. And it's easily applicable. It's the same standard. The balancing test can be applied broadly. And it just makes sense that if it exists for criminal files, if it exists for other things, it would go to evictions as well.
So if I could just take you back to where you started, which sure. Is saying the district, both the housing authority and the district court agreed that there was inherent authority. But I don't see that in the district court's decision. I understand the referee addressed that. But the district court's decision supplants, as I understand it, the referee's decision in the district court looked at this under the statutory factors. Isn't that, that's my reading of it, but is that not yours?
They did, Your Honor. And I'll admit that order is a little confusing. They do cite to the statutes. I think the briefs and everything and this discussion at the hearing was all on the inherent authority. They did not overrule the referee's decision on that. They were reviewing the referee's order, and they did not. I agree that they didn't specifically say that there is an inherent authority, but they did not say that there is no inherent authority. And
so the district court doesn't address the issue, but doesn't the district court's decision, I mean, you all are both deal with these housing court issues much more than I do, doesn't the district court decision supplant the referee's decision?
Yes.
So we're looking at the district court's decision, which does not address inherent authority on its face.
It doesn't, but I think they're tied together. I think the district court is reviewing the referee's order, and the referee order specifically goes into detail about the inherent authority. And then there's nothing in the district court order that specifically says, addresses it one way or the other. They basically are just saying it's denied. They do discuss the statutory eviction expungement. And I think there was maybe some confusion about that. But I don't, because they didn't address it one way or the other, I think it's still at play here. I think they...
Because it was briefed and argued below.
Yes.
I understand that.
And so, like I was saying, the balancing test can be broadly applied to all cases. So we think easy fit So moving on to that second issue is the, what factors need to be considered. And the Duluth HRA has proposed some factors, and there's a concurring opinion in an unpublished case where Judge Connolly gives some suggestions too about what factors should be considered. But
Before we reach the factors, doesn't CA, and I'm trying to find it in CA right now, but maybe it's in the order. I mean, there's an overarching balancing test, right?
Correct.
Whether the benefit or the advantages to, you know, the person seeking expungement would be outweighed by the public interest in knowing it, right?
Correct.
And then there might be any number. Even in CA, is there a specific, are there specific delineation of you must consider these factors? Isn't it just sort of, well, a totality of the circumstances? It might be this, 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 and this.
In CA, yes. In HA, they give actual factors to go through.
And HA is whose case? Ours or the Supreme Court's?
That would be yours.
And even in HA, how do we introduce it? I'm just wondering whether, you know, wasn't it introduced as sort of a number of factors, blah, blah, blah. in other words, if you don't have all of those or you don't consider all of those, is that necessarily error or something that needs to be revisited? Or isn't it just sort of like a totality of the circumstances type of case?
I think it is the totality of the circumstances, but I think that that gives us guidance of what to think of in criminal expungements. And I think that that can easily be moved over to the eviction cases as well. As in, I go through this in my reply brief. We're not saying that you have to specifically go through each one of these and say yes or no. But
and your argument is not that the district court failed to address some necessary factors.
No, that's not our argument. No.
Okay.
They failed, but in such a way that that there are certain things that had to be mentioned, I think, is what we're saying, but not necessarily going through the factors. And these five factors, like I was saying, can be easily switched over to the eviction file. So I don't think we need to recreate the wheel here. It's right there. Like, for example, in the first factor in HAA, it talks about the extent that the petitioner has demonstrated difficulties in securing employment or housing as a result of the record sought to be expunged, easily changed to the difficulties securing housing. Employment can probably just be eliminated for expungement or for evictions, and going through the whole list of the factors, easy switches. These are principles that should be considered and used by district courts and when they're trying to figure out this overarching balancing test.
I have two questions about the factors if we reach that. One, whether it should be what the factors were, whether it would be everything, everything that's relevant, including these factors, should be considered, which is, I think, what Judge Connolly suggested in his non-presidential concurrence. Or if I'm looking at HA, the court says, thus the factors to be considered by the district court are, so it's more confined. So, sure. And then if you could answer that question, then I have one more follow-up.
I guess I would be fine either way with that. I think that there needs to be guidance, and the more strict guidance. I do think those are very broad factors that they give that can kind of fit in a lot of the things that Judge Connolly puts in his thing. Like, I think rent can fit into some of these things. I don't think they need to be delineated quite as much as Judge Connolly says. But the factors in HA are so broad that I think it includes a lot of other things.
You're anticipating my next question, because it was going to be, I read those factors as being broad, and especially the one relating to the seriousness and nature of the offense, that if you, I could see how both parties agree that adding a factor on whether any back rent is owed and how much and whether there's a payment plan, you know, that perhaps that would be an additional factor, but couldn't at least all the rest of them, just the things that are discussed in both of your memorandums, be just addressed in the original five factors HA sets out?
I think absolutely. And that's what we propose, is just keeping those factors with just small tweaks to be open for eviction expungements.
And so, and your argument, just to put a fine point on it for me, as I'm looking at your conclusion, It's just simply that the findings on these were clearly erroneous, not that there needs to be a remand for the district court to consider something it missed.
Correct. Right?
I'm understanding it. Okay.
Correct. So moving on to the third issue here is whether if there was an abuse of discretion. I think if we're looking just at the judge review order, so the district court, in that order, it talks about how there could be this potential benefit to Mr. Young. First of all, it doesn't even mention what these benefits are. Mr. Young is homeless. He's had health problems that are getting worse because he can't get the treatment he needs inside. If he had a home, he needs a nurse, that sort of thing. And there's no record of any of that in this order. Now, I'm not saying that specifically you need to include certain things in the order, but in here, when there's a balancing test, we're totally ignoring the first half of the test, the benefit. All in the judge review order basically says that there's a potential benefit, but that's likely true in every case. First of all, I think Mr. Young's situation is unique. Not every person is homeless when they're evicted. Not every person has health problems like Mr. Young. So I do think his situation is unique, but I also don't think the factors or anything in the case law requires his situation to be unique to him. It's just the benefit to him. And the benefit wasn't even really acknowledged in quite frankly, either of these orders.
As I read the order, it said the potential benefit the tenant may obtain from expungement does not outweigh the public's interest under these facts. And in the transcript, you know, the argument made was that the tenant was rendered homeless and couldn't get the health care he needed because of that. Are you saying that the district court, because you said, well, I'm not saying the district court has to say, what does the district court have to say? What's error there?
I think in this specific case, they have to say that these issues, that there is this potential benefit for Mr. Young.
They have to identify the benefit that was argued to it. And that some it would sort be of error and to not mention that. And so what we need to find that those benefits exist, I'm trying to figure out what the consequences of hearing what the benefits argued and then saying the potential benefit doesn't out referencing the potential benefit without identifying what you argued.
I think the order completely ignores half of the balancing test. And that right there is the issue, that it just completely ignores the benefits. And the benefits here are huge. Like, these are potentially life-changing benefits. And to just put that in a throwaway sentence like that is just it's not enough in this case. And then the uniqueness standard too here, like the judge didn't, it goes to show how little the benefit was considered, because the judge basically said, well, everyone would benefit from an eviction expungement. So it's not as huge as Mr. Young was saying at the hearing. And so that's right there. There's nothing in the factors. There's nothing in the case law that requires the benefit to be unique.
So if I could take you back a bit, I was looking at the State versus CA, where the court adopted the language right after the balancing test for the criminal expungements. The Supreme Court says, an order based on inherent authority of the courts will not be used in a pointless attempt to confine the dissemination of facts already widely known and recorded. And I know this takes us back to the factors discussion, what do we do with that directive from the Supreme Court in this context? Would that be subsumed with the factors as you look at them? I mean, and I recognize this was 1981 decision. This is before the internet, right? But is that something we have to look at?
Could you repeat the section from the case again?
Yeah. So it's right after the court does the balancing test, sure, that we've all been talking about. The Supreme Court says, an order based on inherent authority of the courts will not be issued in a pointless attempt to confine the dissemination of facts already widely known and recorded in the public sector.
So I guess we're talking about the court records here. So the public sector,
But I think they were too, that the court was there too. They're talking about, do we expunge our judicial records, if something's already widely known.
Sure.
And if you want to just give that some thought and think about it in rebuttal, that's fine with me. I wasn't trying to catch you unawares.
Well, I think that I don't think that Mr. Young's case would have been widely known here. I understand that expungement would be pointless in some situations if an eviction was widely known through the community. But I think that the court records here are what is preventing him from finding housing. It's not anything else. It's the eviction on his record. If you're kicked out of public housing and you're low income, there are very few options. And if you have an eviction on your record, boy, you're in trouble. And these court records are what's
And that's clear in the record below, that it's these court records.
Yes, I believe so. And if there are no more questions, I guess I will be back for rebuttal.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent. Let me just take a pause for a moment. We were noticing that we went to no signal and wanted to check in with our AV person. And Becky, is he back here, do you know?
Yes,
yeah. Okay, I'm just going to take a pause and check in. Okay, we have some students who are watching from another courtroom, and also we want to make sure we're getting a record, an oral record of this. So be right back. Wait. We're live. Okay, it's just
No, those don't show. That's for evidence only. So.
We've been seeing it previously, so we're good. All right. Fantastic. Okay, thank you for noticing that.
Never should have questioned.
No, that's good. All right. We're ready for you. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Your Honors. My name is Brandon Ingblom. I stand before you today on behalf of the Housing and Redevelopment Authority of Duluth, Minnesota, the respondent in this case. We're here to defend the decision by the district court in denying Mr. Young's requested expungement. And furthermore, we're here seeking additional guidance for lower courts as they handle this weighty, equitable issue that has yet to receive formal guidance. We agree with the appellant in this case on the really points that we're grappling with. First and foremost, does inherent authority expungements reach eviction cases, or is it somehow unique to criminal law? Second being the district court's factors and applying that kind of examination or test in these civil cases, or specifically eviction cases, and then did the district court apply that test correctly? First and foremost, we do think that there's no dividing line between the publicly available portion of a criminal record and the publicly available portion of a civil record of any kind. We think that's a very weird distinction to draw in terms of your ability to search the court's maintained database for the status of a case. So we don't really find any reason why there would be a distinction between them in the court managing its own records. As it relates to its ability to expunge cases, I think that we're in agreement, and maybe the Court of Appeals will hopefully agree with us, that the Court of Appeals, the court system itself has to have authority over its own records in order to be an independent body of government. It has to have the inherent authority to manage its own records in whatever way it chooses to do that. And in this case, it's publishing for the public the status of cases that it's hearing. Going on then to the factors.
Before we move to what the factors should be, I just want to make sure I'm clear, because there is a statement in the statute that says courts have inherent authority, but that seems to be tied to if they're finding in favor of one party. So when we're talking about inherent authority, I want to make it clear, you're not talking about that type, called statutory inherent authority, separation of powers aside. Right? You're talking about the same kind of inherent authority we've recognized in the criminal cases, that's sort of constitutional, or is that right?
Yes, Judge. Okay. And even more so, I think that the legislature, in what they're doing there, is inviting the court to use its equitable power in those circumstances. I don't think they have the authority to command the court to use its equitable power as a separations of powers question. But I think that's a very strong invite to do that in those cases, because they're mentioning inherent authority. And everywhere we see inherent authority, I think in this case law, it's always equitable. It's not a legal remedy. And equity is, you know, this discretionary power of the court. And so I think it's the only sensible way to continue to read that, unless you have statutory expungement, equitable statutory expungement, and then, statutory expungement, inherent authority statutory expungement, and then equitable inheritance authority.
Under the Constitution or some other, yeah, okay.
Yeah, a strange three-bucket system. I think it really should be just two in terms of clarity is what I'm thinking they're trying to get to. Going on to the factors then, we disagree with the appellant in this case in terms of the factors we're talking about. We do think that the factors listed in HA are very instructive and really can be a framework for eviction cases. But the purpose of HA really is talking about criminal records. And you have a factor, I believe it's D, that talks about rehabilitation. And that really is a criminal specific question we're talking about, right? Someone who's seeking to be relieved of a DWI offense, you know, they can show years of sobriety. You know, you can show they've been rehabilitated through a system. That doesn't quite seem to square in the same way as housing. So we agree the terms are broad, but we think that this really deserves some tweaks of its own. And we have proffered some potential.
Before you get to those specific things, you know, there are lots of balancing tests the district courts apply without the benefit of, you know, a list of factors from the Court of Appeals or from the Supreme Court. Why is this kind of balancing test not enough? Why do they then need us to give either an exhaustive or non-exhaustive list?
Yeah, so I think that really it's a safeguard. So we do entrust district courts to do an uncountable number of balancing tests in their line of work. And I think this is really just worried or concerned about the applicability in terms of the way it's being performed, because the weight of this effect is so great on both the petitioner and others in the system. In this case, for example, Mr. Young seeking the termination or the removal of this record. The housing authority in front of Judge Chernowski argued that we have a concern that he is going to cause harm to one of our other program participants. And so I think that there's weight here that really deserves some additional guidance on what to consider. We don't necessarily think it has to be as authoritative as HA to say you must go through these factors, which I think HA really does say. It says you must consider these factors so we know you've done the test right. But we think some list or even non-exhaustive list at a minimum would be appropriate in these cases.
So that going back to my question to appellant's counsel, so you would agree it doesn't need to be an exhaustive list? I mean, because I agree with you. HA seems to say these are the factors.
Yes, I don't think it has to be an exhaustive list, but an instructive list at a minimum would be appropriate in our view. The court could fashion an exhaustive list, say these are the factors if they chose to. I don't know of any compelling reason that it must be so.
So what, other than the back rent question, which I think you both agree would be appropriate to be a factor, which other one would not be subsumed by the HA factors?
So you
believe are particularly important.
Yeah. So in this case, I think that we give an example of a case that we had recently here in Duluth that we call the Strickland case. And we provide the court's order in our appendix on that, where a petitioner became an adult during this time the lease was in arrears. And she joined the lease as an individual tenant. And so she's now on the hook for those missed months. Eviction starts. We have a person who's in high school, who's 18, in order to effectuate the recovery of property, must be named to the complaint, right? They're an adult tenant. Orders bind parties. If you're not a party to the order, you're not bound to the order as a general black letter law concept. And so they're named, they go through the eviction process. In this case, we acknowledge, you know, that she isn't really personally culpable for everything that happened. Right. And so in that case, we essentially consented or supported the expungement of that record because we're talking about a child who became an adult. And that unique situation in housing court isn't really central. This personal culpability doesn't really fit in the HA factors because culpability is really assumed. It's a criminal conviction. Right. Your personal culpability is there, or you've been found guilty or pled guilty to the offense. And so we think that there are some unique factors that should be considered. And I think Strickland really highlights that for people who get caught in this pinch point, who don't deserve to be homeless or to be hung up on that record for that reason. So that's one really important one, I think. A second one to consider is what something that Judge Chernowski actually considered, and that's the interest of the government in some of these cases. We listed out concerns that if one of our section, for example, one of our Section 8 landlords gets a tenant and they get burned, there's a strong incentive for them to leave the program. And that's a net loss of low-income housing for our community. And so when we have a concern about a bad actor or someone who may make bad choices that may harm our other participants, we want to at least have to raise that question for the court to consider. It's not dispositive. The court can say, HR, that's a great reason, or it's a terrible reason. And so I'm not going to rely on it. But we do think that there's a question of governmental interest that should be addressed. That's always addressed in criminal cases, but not necessarily in these civil cases. So there are two, I think, points that really kind of fall outside of the scope of HA because they're already there in the inherent nature of criminal cases.
So if I may, if we agree with both of you that district court should have this inherent authority, don't we have to reverse and remand because Judge Chernowski's order, you know, is based upon the statutory construct, not inherent authority?
So I don't agree. And here's why. So Judge Chernowski, in the absence of clear authority, used the statute as her initial guideposts, but her order clearly goes beyond the statutory question, right? She starts weighing governmental interest and talks about the benefit to Mr. Young. I think that she stretches beyond the confines of the statute. She certainly uses it as a guidepost, and she certainly does not indicate plainly that she's doing an inherent authority expungement. But I think the essence of it is there because she goes beyond the statute. And because she's going beyond the statute, we think that that's an implicit reach, especially in talking about the fact that she's reviewing the lower court, understanding her decision supplants the lower court. But she's reviewed that, and nowhere does she rebuke the referee's assessment of the law. So we do think there's some connection there, understanding it may not be very clear.
If we agreed with that analysis, then why would we even get to the factors? I mean, that would just be dicta, right?
So So at a minimum, we think that we win. I guess my client's position, right? At a minimum, we think that we have this case. However, we don't think the court is prohibited in its decision to say on a prospective basis, this is what we want to see or additional things to consider that the lower court in this case did consider. For example, our proposed factor number 8, governmental interest. That's not a part of the HA case. So the court can, I think, give additional instruction without a remand or an overturning in this case. Continuing on then to the kind of the last prong, you know, did the judge use the balancing test appropriately in this case? We think that it is, right? And an interesting question in this case is, you know, is the existence of eviction action on your record some sort of a universal harm that needs cure? And I think the position, and I'm not to put words in their mouth, but of appellants in this case, is that yes, it's a generalized, a universal harm. However, we have some pause with that because the legislature, in creating the eviction action, intends some level of social harm, right? They intend the displacement. And so they're attempting to undo the harm contemplated by the legislature in that action. Which is a little bit different than criminal law, right? The purpose of criminal law isn't to simply create a criminal record for you. It's to penalize you for conduct. So you are sentenced to fines or prison or whatever it happens to be. The court doesn't undo the fine or the imprisonment or the punishment, the harm intended by the legislature. And so it's a little bit different if you think of the framing. What is the legislature doing in this action? And so the court in that case says, you know, what is Mr. Young's harm that is different than what's intended by the legislature? And I think that's a valid question. So in our proposed factors, HA talks about harm. We call it, you know, undue harm, harm that wasn't commanded by the legislature, inherent to the action itself. Because simply being displaced by itself, we don't think is properly before the court in an equitable action to undo what the legislature is expressly trying to do. So we're concerned, as I think I raised in our brief, that we don't want some sort of, for lack of a better terminology, thumbing our nose at what the legislature is trying to do under the court's equitable powers. And so the court goes through that. And then, of course, the court takes great note of Mr. Young's action in making two separate settlement agreements and then breaching those agreements and then coming to court saying, woe is me, I need your equitable relief. We believe that's a silent invocation of unclean hands. And we think it's appropriate to say, look, you've entered into two settlement agreements to leave. You violated both of them. You know, at some point in time, the consequences of your actions have to attach to you. And this is the only place that seems to happen.
Can you speak to the question about the basis about considering the material lease violations when they were not agreed to because there was a settlement where you didn't have to go to a hearing? Wanted you to speak to that. And I also wondered whether in the criminal arena, whether if there's an arrest but not an adjudication of a conviction, is the seriousness of the offense that's underlying the arrest considered?
I don't have that answer for you in the criminal law, so I apologize for not having the answer for that, but I can explain to you the rationale into this case, why it's appropriate. So in this case, we have an attempt to settle, right? We favor settlement in order to avoid eviction wherever we can. In this case, we believe that we have evidence that showed some very significant breaches. Understanding that's not the cause of the action, right? The cause of the action is that he overstayed, right? He gave back his stick of present possession to the HRA. The legal operative question is that he overstayed. Everything else doesn't matter. And so it's not properly in the complaint. But when you're talking about equitable relief, you know, we file with the court and say, look, this was the reason why we made this agreement, the facts as to why we struck this bargain that he broke. So we don't think it has to be confined to the complaint. We think the court can take a totality of the circumstances, review as it's weighing whatever factors it chooses, or in light of not having factors it creates, or guideposts from the legislature it tries to find. But we think that's appropriate for the court to review as they look at this. We don't think the court is required in using equitable power to put on a blindfold and to do it without the view of the rationale of the parties. I see my time is expiring, and I will turn it over then to appellant if there's no questions.
Great. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant? You have 5 minutes as we get our clock set. Thank you.
Thank you. As far as the factors go, I think even the examples that were brought up here, I think they still fit into the HRA categories. There's one kind of catch-all for the hardship at the end. I think it can include even the examples brought up today. But one thing that I want to mention is even the factors proposed by the Duluth HRA here, most of these weren't even addressed by the judge order here. They didn't go through, or they didn't even mention a lot of these. Like all they talk about is Mr. Young was evicted for failing to move out by a certain date. That's what's in the record. That's what was proven in court. We don't even have, there's nothing that was ever proven of lease violations. That's where it should be.
Because the referee considered that, right? The terminated due to material lease violations.
Yes.
Involving intentional and sometimes criminal acts. Obviously, we don't want, I would think, obviously, some sort of disincentive for landlords to settle without a fine. I mean, right, because in many cases, if they resolve it without any findings and then the person moves out, it's to the benefit of everybody, including the tenant, if the settlement resolves it. So here there's a settlement that doesn't include any findings, which seems to me natural and good. But I was wondering whether, is it wrong if there is, you know, if there are allegations made, is it wrong to consider in those? And that's why I asked the question about in the criminal arena. I know, like under the statute, there's the seriousness of the offense is considered. I wondered if you happen to know whether the seriousness of an underlying charge is considered in expunging like arrest records, something prior to a conviction, which seems to me sort of an analog.
I guess I don't have that answer either.
That's okay.
Yet. I do think here, I think there's an opportunity for an evidentiary hearing if the HRA would have wanted one to prove that there was these things going on. But right now in our record, there's nothing. So Mr. Young would have had to prove a negative. He would have had to prove that he didn't commit these allegations, because that's all they were at this point. They were never proven. The reason he was evicted was because he stayed past the move out date. So that's the other problem here.
A factor might be the nature of underlying allegation or lease violations or allegations of, I mean, I guess it, you know, I appreciate that they're not proved. I'm just wondering whether they matter, or whether it's wrong to even consider that it matters.
I think it is wrong to consider just the mere allegation. I think through the expungement hearings that there could potentially be new testimony about that sort of thing.
Yeah, it just seems interesting to turn the expungement hearing into then the challenge on the...
Yeah, I understand that, but I think letting the allegation itself be a part of this makes the petitioner have to prove a negative, have to prove that he didn't do something, which unfairly, I think, shifts the burden on that issue. And I just don't think that that's how our system is designed to work. And I think testimony certainly could be taken, but I don't think it's fair to put that onto the petitioner, just the mere allegations.
Counsel, what about the government interest factor that counsel for respondent addressed? Does that fit in, or is that something we should consider?
I don't think that that's, they can come in and say they object. I don't think that the government has any special weight that they should be given. I mean, if anything, that would punish the low-income people that are in the public housing more so than anyone else. I think their interest should be treated like every other landlord. The landlord comes in and objects, they can have their day in court, but I don't think that they should be given special interest just because of that. So I guess I'll just wrap up by saying Mr. Young evicted for staying past move-out date. Huge benefits. These benefits weren't even addressed in the order. All that we're talking about is someone that moved out too late. The balancing test is way in his favor. And to not even acknowledge those was an abuse of discretion. There's a lot of harm here. The court didn't address that. And we're asking that the court reverse the order because of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments, for your briefing. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period.